This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last Thursday, two Burlington residents received flyers at their homes that purported to come from the Ku Klux Klan. "Join the Klan and save our land," the flyers proclaimed. Both of the people who were targeted by these flyers were female and Black. Over the weekend, a press conference was held in the city by activists condemning the flyers and supporting the women involved. Mayor Murrow Weinberger was there, so was the Burlington police chief, whose department is investigating the incident. But it's safe to say the issue has raised a lot of concern, a lot of questions, and much anger. It's also surfaced some tension within the city and the state over race issues. Today on the program, we're going to talk about what happened and what the reaction is. We'll learn about hate groups operating in Vermont, and we'll offer a safe space for you to react to what you're hearing, seeing, and thinking. If you'd like to share your perspective, you can send us an email. Write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. That number again is 1-800-639-2211. Jocelyn Harvey was one of the recipients of these flyers, and she joins me now in the studio. Jocelyn, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Can you describe actually what happened and how you found this flyer?
Yes, so it happened last Thursday. I got home from work around 5 or 6 and went to my mailbox, noticed something was folded up that wasn't typical mail, and when I got in and opened it up and I saw the image and the text at the top, I just thought it was a really cruel joke, but I just thought it was a joke. I didn't at that time know someone else had received it.
How did you find out that somebody else had gotten one?
I actually saw it online, and when I had got my that flyer, I had posted a photo online, so I thought maybe someone had shared my image, and then I realized that it was another one floating around.
And that changed your feeling?
Definitely. That changed it from being a really bad prank to quite scary.
When you realized that it was something that somebody else had gotten as well, and you felt that fear, what did you do?
It was at 10 o'clock on a Friday. I had to work the next day, and I was a bundle of stress. I was able to reach out to several people, the group that had circulated the image, so I had people to talk to, but it was late at night on a night when people are in bed early or they're out, so there wasn't really a lot of direct support.
What did that feel like then?
It felt scary, especially because it was in my own home as well, and it's continued to remain that way.
The fear has.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you worry? Do you worry that somebody knows where you are and is going to do something to you?
I don't know if they would necessarily do something, but it is a worry that they know where I live. As I said at the press conference, this isn't like New York where there's a higher, you know, population of people of color, where if you just leave a flyer every few houses, you might hit a few people that happen to be Black. This is Vermont. So at some point, someone not only saw me walk into my house, but they saw which mailbox is mine because my neighbors didn't get it. And then, you know, it also stresses me out because I do live in a building with a few other people. This has affected my neighbors as well. They're very supportive, but it's not just me either.
So what do you want to have happen to ensure your safety, first of all?
So having, you know, worked with the police department, I will say that I feel very safe and, you know, they're on it with my neighbors. I want to know who is doing this. I want to know if it's one or two people. I want to know if it's the beginning of a group that's really starting.
Does it change your perspective of how you feel about your community? And by your community, I mean the Burlington community and the Vermont community.
I wouldn't really say that. I've been in Vermont for 6 years, and I've been in my apartment for a year and a half, and I've never felt, you know, any overt racism here. There's always that little underlying stuff. But, you know, the community that came out, I was not surprised about the response, both the positive and some of the negative things that were said, but I don't really have a changed feeling negatively about my community. It's just those one or two or maybe several people who have sort of integrated their way into it.
What are the reactions you're hearing? You mentioned both positive and negative.
So, you know, positive ones, people just being really like, you know, this is 2015. I can't believe this is happening. And, you know, most of my friends and colleagues are, you know, not Black. So part of it's like, I'm not super surprised at the same time. But there's, you know, been this overwhelming support, and just some negative things. Having not read any of the comments, knowing how those can go.
You mean on news articles?
Yeah, has and... just kind of been, you know, maybe they did it themselves to get attention, or...
You mean that's what you think the commenters are saying?
Or,
like, you did this to yourself.
Yeah, I did this to myself, or, well, you know, it's free speech, so is this really even a crime? But overall, I feel like there's been more support than negativity.
What do you think about that reaction? This is free speech, not a crime. It may be hateful, but should we sanction it? What's your reaction to that?
It took me a while to think of one, but this was deliberately put on my mailbox, and the other one when it was on her door. This wasn't just left up at like a town board about events going around town and, hey, a KKK flyer. This was targeted to me. So that's where I'm starting to feel like it is a crime more so than just general fear.
You said that you're not totally surprised by this, that this happened to you. But you also said, you know, nothing like this has happened to you in Burlington before. So help me understand that, you know, that sort of split image.
Yeah. So I'm from Maine, and I've lived here my entire life. So I'm used to sort of I call it northern racism, and this is not everyone, but there's just that underlying, it's a little more quiet. You know, it's not as in your face. You know, I have been walking places and had someone, like, you know, yell a slur out the window at me. So I don't live in this happy-go-lucky colorblind world at all. But I am more surprised that it did happen, you know, in Burlington.
Because you think Burlington feels different?
Yeah, just because in my 6 years here, I haven't really dealt with a lot of stuff like this.
We're talking with Jocelyn Harvey. She received a flyer from the KKK or from somebody who purports to be writing for the KKK last week. And we're talking about what that was like. We're also going to talk a little bit about hate groups that are operating in Vermont and what's known about KKK operations in the state. We'd love to hear your reaction, your perspective, if you'd like to share. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net. Frank is calling in from Rutland. Hi, Frank. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
A little bit about my story is I'm originally from California. I've lived in, I guess, central Vermont, southern Vermont, for about a year and a half. And one of the things that was striking automatically was just the lack of diversity. But I find it interesting that people don't believe, or either people are startled by what happened in Burlington. I'm a little startled that it happened in Burlington, because where I live now, I moved here because of my wife for a career opportunity, but where I live, I'm stared at. I look like I feel like I'm in a fishbowl, because it's like, wow, people seem like they've never seen a black person before. But the prevalence of Confederate flags is just amazing to me, that I am a photographer, so I actually take photographs of them. And after the North Carolina incident, I just saw more and more pickup trucks with Confederate flags, full Confederate flags, just waving freely. So I know Vermont's not the South, but it has its issues, I believe. And I think people don't want to recognize it, to the point everyone that I've ever spoken with, community leaders, business people, they've all said, oh, they don't know what they're doing. They just want to belong to something. I sat with the police chief, and he said exactly the same thing. And I was just kind of taken back by that. So it's kind of the onus is on the victim to say, this is really happening. I'm not imagining this, but that's kind of my take.
Frank, when something like this event happens that we've been talking about, and it does become very public, and it's something that's being discussed, does that help, or do you just see that as, you know, sort of window treatment, and then the problem stays?
Well, the problem, I think, is, and I'll just say it this way. The majority culture, the white culture, they, to me, to live in a cocoon where if it doesn't affect them, if they don't see it, it's really not happening. But if you look at your state, I mean, we're 1%, nearly 1% of the population, but we're 10% of the incarcerated. I have been told by professional people, that black people that come here are either they want to sell drugs to these poor little white kids, or I'm here to get on the welfare system. And does it help? That mean it probably would help if other people would listen objectively. And again, like I said, I brought it up because I've never seen a Confederate flag in California, maybe once in my life. And I was like, whoa, that was a trip. But I see them all the time here. And when I bring it up to people, even a Jewish man I brought it up to, and he said, a professional Jewish man, and he said, well, don't worry about it. It's just you. I said, what if it was a flag with a swastika? And he said, oh, well, that's different. So this conversation, I think it would help if other people would have a little bit of empathy toward what it feels like when you're in a fishbowl.
Frank, I hear you, and I appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective. Jocelyn Harvey, when you hear Frank reacting, and you've now been thrust into this very public position of talking about what happened to you and being asked questions about race and racism in Vermont, where you live, what do you think about your role now, and how do you respond to that idea of, you know, something that Frank's talking about, living in a fishbowl, but also that this is not a discussion that a lot of people have, or that often people say there's no racism in Vermont?
It's difficult. When we said the fishbowl statement, it makes sense. You know, when I walk around, I'm, you know, very aware that I'm black, not to a crippling point. And so that's the thing is, you know, if I ever hear someone say something that's racist, there's, you know, there's part of me that wants to guide them in a different direction, give my point of view, explain, hey, this is why, you know, what you said is wrong. But at the same time, like, I'm not an activist. It's not something that I spend my time doing. I'm not against activists by any mean, but it's also stressful to think because of this, I want to talk about it. It needs to be known, but how much do you want to become a poster child for a situation? It's a lot of pressure to have.
What would you like to be known for?
You know, in relation to this, hopefully that, you know, coming forward, we're able to find, you know, these people that are doing this and learn why they're doing this.
Jocelyn Harvey, we've been talking a little bit about what it felt like to be targeted by someone in the form of a KKK flyer that was placed in her mailbox last week. Jocelyn, I really appreciate you being on the program today.
Thank you for having me again.
If you'd like to share your thoughts on this, we'd like to be a safe space to talk. You can post a note on our Facebook page or write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net, or you can call us. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Rebecca, who's calling in from White River Junction. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling in because I'm a recent graduate from UVM, and I lived on Main Street in Burlington, in a pretty seedy apartment. But when I lived there, I lived across the street from a group of individuals who had very clear swastika tattoos and kind of classic skinhead look. And I guess I was just relating. I am a white woman, so I didn't personally feel attacked by them, but there were definitely moments of concern. And especially for friends of mine who would visit my apartment. So I was just relating to that feeling of fear and definitely concern and shock that there's people who would display that kind of racism and hatred in Burlington.
Rebecca, thanks for your call. Appreciate your perspective. And let's talk to Dee, who's calling in from Roxbury. Hi, Dee. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my husband and I adopted our kids. We're white. Our kids are brown. We adopt them as babies. Now they're in their 20s. And my contention has always been racism is alive and well in Vermont. And I don't think Vermonters want to see that. But I saw it with my kids coming up through school. And, you know, even now, it's terrible.
So, Dee, when you hear conversations like this, what do you think about them?
Well, I think that's awful. You know, it's terrible. I mean, even my daughter now is 22. She, people ignore her. They don't know what to do with her. You know what I mean? They don't, they're afraid of her or something. I don't know. She's sweet and she's wonderful. And, but I think that sometimes people, they don't know what to say or, I don't know. They treat her like she's really, really different. And she's not. She's just a regular 22-year-old woman.
Dee, thank you for your perspective. And I can hear that heartache in your voice. I appreciate you sharing. We're talking today about race, racism, hate speech, hate groups in Vermont. And we're offering a conversation if you'd like to join others and talk about what this feels like, what it feels like to have this conversation in Vermont, what else we should be doing besides having a conversation. Coming up, we're going to learn a little bit more about what hate groups are operating in Vermont. We're also going to talk with the chief of police in Burlington about what his department is doing in response. And we're going to have more conversation about all of this with you and your perspective. You can post a note at vpr.net/Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and we're talking about race and racism in Vermont today. We're talking about this with the backdrop of the news that two black women in Burlington were targeted with flyers that had a KKK message last week, and that's become public and a public cause for concern and conversation. And we're having that conversation here today on a statewide and beyond basis. And if you'd like to share your thoughts, you can post them at vpr.net. Click on today's Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. That number again is 1-800-639-2211. We did want to get a sense of what hate groups are known to be operating in Vermont, and we're joined now from Montgomery, Alabama, by Mark Potok, a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups. Mark actually grew up in Plainfield, Vermont. Thanks very much for talking with us today, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me. Pleasure.
Is the Ku Klux Klan known to be operating in Vermont?
Well, we have not found, look, some years ago there was a Clavern, a small Klan chapter in Putney for several years, but that disappeared probably 7-8 years ago. And as far as we know, we've not found any Klan chapters in Vermont in the last year or two. So, you know, it's probably worth pointing out that we really have no idea if the people who placed these flyers in mailboxes actually were Klansmen or a Klansman. It very easily could have been simply some unpleasant person who has these racial feelings, who went up to one of numerous Klan websites on the internet and printed out these flyers. They're, you know, very easy to do just that, to simply go up on a site and print them out. And it happens quite frequently. You know, the other possibility is that it is perhaps someone who's not even particularly racist, but some, you know, sort of teenager, some malcontent teenager making trouble. I mean, I think the fact that the two people targeted were, in fact, black does suggest something, that it's a neighbor, it's somebody who actually has seen the victims. But I think the chances of it being really a bona fide Klansman and there being a real Klan group forming in or around Burlington is probably less than half. I think that's probably less likely.
So, Mark, what does it say to you, though, that these two flyers were targeted at two black women at their homes, not posted on, you know, a bulletin board or sort of left somewhere randomly? Does that suggest something different to you?
Well, it suggests that there is such a thing as racism in Vermont, which seems perfectly obvious, and that these women were, in fact, targeted for racial reasons. I think that is the likelihood. I don't think that it tells us necessarily that there's a Klan group operating, although it's possible. I mean, look, many states have vastly more hate groups than Vermont. I mean, we list currently 3 hate groups in Vermont, and they are very, very small. You know, a comparison is across the lake, New York State has 44 hate groups. So in terms of comparisons to other places around the country, Vermont is only really kind of lightly touched by actual hate group activity, as opposed to racism, which, you know, I think is obviously present in Vermont society, just as it is in the societies of every other state.
Mark, what are those hate groups, the three that you mentioned that are known to be operating, and how do you define them and what they're doing?
Sure. Well, one is in Middlebury. It's a small group called the Creativity Alliance. The Creativity Alliance used to be called the World Church of the Creator, and it's what was once a very large neo-Nazi skinhead group. What happened, though, was that around 1999, its national leader, a guy named Matt Hale, a lawyer from Illinois, was convicted of soliciting the murder of a federal judge and sent to prison for 40 years. So the group has essentially fallen apart. We don't know the details of this chapter in Middlebury, but it's probably very few people, 2, 3, maybe 4 people, that kind of thing. We also, the other two groups, we're not sure where in Vermont they are. But there is a group called, or a chapter of a group called the National Socialist Movement, NSM. That is the largest currently neo-Nazi group in the United States. That's based actually in Detroit, of all places, and led by a very unpleasant guy, a guy named Jeff Scope, who once upon a time burgled an apartment with his girlfriend and the mother of his children while their children were left to wait in a car for them to return from burglarizing that apartment. The third group is really tiny. It is called Aryan Strike Force. And again, we don't know exactly where in Vermont it is. Aryan Strike Force is something run by a guy named Josh Stever. Josh Stever is a very hardline neo-Nazi skinhead from the state of New Jersey. That's where he's based. He used to run a little tiny group earlier called the Aryan Terror Brigade. And, you know, this guy is, extremely noticeable, to say the least. He's got the words racist tattooed in 2-inch-high letters across his forehead. He's got a swastika tattooed under one eye. He also ran for a time a website called Red Watch, which listed, quote-unquote, enemies of the movement. And that's a rather scary thing. Red Watch doesn't exist anymore, but there were other versions, one in Poland and one in Great Britain, run by other people. In that case, two people who were listed, one Pole and one British labor activist, were both stabbed as a result of being listed on that website. In any case, those are the three groups. Vermont has a little bit of a history back in the 90s, in particular in the late 80s, very hardline anti-abortion groups, groups and individuals who were involved in various crimes directed at abortion providers. But that has more or less passed. So really, I think the truth is that, well, as I say, Vermont struggles with racism, as virtually every place in this country does. The scene in terms of the radical right in Vermont is very, very small.
That's Mark Potok. He's a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center tracks hate groups around the country, and we've been talking a little bit about what's known about operational groups in Vermont. Mark, thank you very much for being on the program.
Sure, a pleasure.
We are talking about race and racism today, getting some of your thoughts as well. Kermit's calling in from West Townsend. Hi, Kermit. Go right ahead.
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to make a couple of points. One, I want for listeners to recall that the importance of Vermont in the history of the United States with Underground Railroad and how many important black personages have moved to Vermont back in the in the early days of the state and did unusually well as doctors and teachers, et cetera. So I wanted to point that out. I'm an African American myself. I was adopted, raised in a very conservative John Bircher community out west in Nevada. And so I'm very familiar with racism. One of the things that I've been here since 94. And the things that I have noticed here as the woman who was threatened with the KKK pamphlet, sorry, I can't remember her name.
Jocelyn Harvey.
Pointed out there is kind of a northern racism. I'm sorry?
Jocelyn Harvey.
Kathleen, thank you. There is this very subtle racism. And there's a couple of things going on. One, it is the Obama years. And I noticed that once Obama started running for president, suddenly there were Confederate flags where there hadn't been. And there was an animosity when I would go into various bars and things that I'd always been into. Now it was sort of ingrained more and more. And then you start watching Fox News and they're racialists. And that's one of the other big points I want to make, is that there's a difference between racism and prejudice. There are many prejudiced people everywhere, especially in red states, and people that call themselves conservatives. Many of them are prejudiced. That doesn't make them racist, but they are prejudiced. And they look for confirmation bias to point, you know, they learn this on things like Fox News and their talk radio. And so they're always looking for confirmation bias, and this justifies their perspective on the world. It's only racism once they start threatening somebody or harming somebody and taking that prejudice to another level. But prejudice is completely dissolvable with education, and it often does. Racialism is, I think, what our whole country is really suffering from the Black Lives Matter movement, which I personally find useless and insulting to my own intelligence, to the problems of white cops right here in the state who will harass you and treat you. I've had run-ins even with our fish and game where somebody has talked at me and told me what they think of me as if it's a fact, when in fact it isn't. They just don't know anything about me. They're being prejudiced. But then the last thing that we have to be dealing with, which is very important to acknowledge, is that we do have urban blacks moving more and more in our state, and they are associated with drugs. They are associated with certain elements that are not welcome, places like Brattleboro and what have you. It doesn't mean that all black people are doing that, but it's just obvious.
Well, Kermit, it's interesting to hear your perspective and where you're coming from. And I certainly would not agree with you that, you know, that all blacks moving into Vermont are coming from urban areas and are selling drugs. I think that's a misconception that's been debunked. But that is one of the tensions that you hear about in Vermont, and one of the tensions that you hear about when it comes to police interactions, certainly. So let's go to the police. Let's talk right now about police reaction to the event that we've been talking about, and to the idea of how do you talk about race relations? How do you deal with things that are difficult, that deal with race, may not rise to the level of criminal action? So we're going to welcome now the Burlington Chief of Police, Brandon Del Pozo, on the line. Chief Del Pozo, you just heard Kermit's thoughts, and you're dealing with this now in this community that you've just moved to in Burlington about how to address issues of race and racism and when ugly racism rears its head. So how do you think about that and address it?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I was at the annual conference for the International Association of Chiefs of Police last week. It was in Chicago. President Obama spoke, and he said something that I actually sent out over social media because I thought it was very poignant. He said, show me your budget, and I'll show you your values. And, you know, I think that that's telling, and it applies in this case. I was very lucky to find out about this incident, unfortunately not when I should have, but the very next morning. And we've put a tremendous amount of resources into getting a good set of leads in the case and figuring out who's behind this. And it's not even necessarily about building a case that we can prosecute. We benefit as a police department, but more importantly, we benefit as a city and a state by knowing who's behind acts like this. You know, it was great to hear Mark Podock say that there's very few hate groups in Vermont, that they have a really small foothold, but that kind of doesn't change the situation here. As a police department, we feel like we have two victims who feel more vulnerable and less safe in our city. So no matter what comes of this, the way we can contribute as a police department is by finding out exactly what's going on here and being very thorough in our investigation and then reporting our findings.
You just said you have some leads. Is that true? You have leads who you think may have done this?
Well, we don't have a named suspect yet, but we're about to review some video that might prove to be pretty probative. I'll be happy to be completely transparent about that once I know that it's in fact, you know, good news. But it's the product of a very, very thorough investigation. And this is a relatively small city, so we do benefit from having a pretty good set of connections throughout the community. We got some tips from actually a local elected official that we followed up on pretty quickly.
Can you describe what those are?
Yeah, sure. Someone may have left a flyer laying around inadvertently, a third flyer in a public place that had video. So we're retrieving the video this afternoon. If we'd already looked at it, I'd be able to say more. One of the first things we did, we know that in the run-up to the rally about this, you know, there were activists who were circulating the flyer. We just wanted to make sure it wasn't something that was inadvertently dropped by somebody protesting this. And then once we ruled out that, we figured we might have some good evidence, and we're following up on that.
Does this rise to a criminal level?
Yeah, so, that really depends. Ironically, the fewer people that receive it, the more likely it is, in my opinion, my experience anyway, to be criminal. If it's a blanket leafleting, somebody could make a First Amendment defense. But if it's two victims of color who were targeted, then that definitely bolsters it. We've also worked closely with South Burlington. There were some business cards with similar logos that were found a few weeks ago. I had a long talk with Ms. Harvey just to make sure she was doing okay and keep her apprised of the investigation. And she let us know that someone brought that to her attention. She was extremely cooperative. We're very grateful. She passed that along. So we're also looking at an incident near the Quarry Hill Apartments in full cooperation with the South Burlington Police.
Whether or not it rises to the level of criminality, what's the role your department plays in addressing issues of race and racism in your city?
Yeah, listen, I mean, and it's important to say we're really working in tandem with the state's attorney's office to see if this does. We ideally, would just given my, I mean, I've spoken with both the victims, including the one that prefers to remain anonymous, and I feel genuine my belief that they were victimized. So first, understand that we're trying to make a case. This definitely has a chilling effect on people's freedom of movement and expression in Burlington. Not just the two victims, but other persons of color who are aware that this happened. It was insidious. So the role of the police, number one, is just to we need to embody the city's value of tolerance and inclusiveness by taking this very seriously. That was where I lament the response of my dispatch. I mean, there was an empathy.
What you're referring to here, let me just fill people in who may not have heard. There was a 911 call that the father of the other victim made a call to 911, and the dispatcher, I'm fully paraphrasing here, but basically said, this does not rise to the level of an emergency. There doesn't seem to be a crime that occurred. This is not a call for 911. And you've said that was not the way that you'd like first responders to be responding, that it's your call whether or not it's a crime, and that was not the right interaction.
Yeah, that's right, and I have to be clear about that. I mean, that's not what I want people to understand, that they have a voice when they call us, and that one incident, one flyer may not seem like a crime, but if it's part of something else, it may be, and we need to get that information and start processing it, and we need to be empathetic towards a father calling because he's scared for his daughter. I mean, that's the first role of the police, is to be a resource when people feel like they're vulnerable. We protect the city's vulnerable, and the way we allocate our investigative resources, our patrol officers should embody the city's values too, which is why this is a case that we're working very actively. We also would
there,
ideally
let me just interrupt you again though, yeah, Chief please. Del Pozo, there was a concern expressed by one of the activists at Saturday's press conference that the police wouldn't have responded as forcefully and publicly to this incident if the whole thing hadn't been made very public. You vehemently disagreed, and there was a tense moment at that press conference, but you're saying that's not true, that this is something that you would respond to.
Yeah, I mean, and thank you for bringing that up. I mean, when the citizen said that, I mean, I had this very emotional reaction because we've been working so hard on this case from the moment we found out. And really, if you talk to so many police officers, especially here in Burlington, they become police officers to protect vulnerable people and to find people who are like spewing hate, spewing racism, making other people feel uncomfortable in their own skin, to prevent that from happening, to bring it to justice. Like, that's a commitment that we're making. And, we've really gone to extraordinary lengths canvassing, looking for video, collecting license plates of cars parked in front of apartments in South Burlington to see if there's people who may be living there who have a history of racism or incidents, really leaving no stone unturned. And so my own approach to these incidents is every bias incident, whether it rises to the level of a crime or not, gets a thorough investigation. The first goal of the investigation is to see if a crime has in fact occurred, but the second goal of the investigation is to form a repository of what racism and prejudice looks like in the city, because every citizen benefits from knowing what the situation is, what the truth of the matter is. And secondly, victims need to know that they will be heard when they come to us, and that means that the allegation of bias alone begets an investigation.
Brandon Del Pozo is chief of police in Burlington. I hope you'll keep us apprised of that video that you mentioned, and thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Listeners, again, if you'd like to share your perspective, we're talking about race and racism in Vermont, hate speech, hate groups. You can post a note on our webpage, go to vpr.net/Vermont Edition, or call 1-800-639-2211. Johnny's calling in from Hudson, New Hampshire. Hi, Johnny, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So I just had a statement. A lot of people express their disgust and their disdain for those who have racist beliefs and predominantly and arrogantly display their hate and racism publicly. But a lot of people have a hard time being social activists when it comes to those problems. Stand up and say something to those people. I know that I'm not saying violently, we shouldn't be violent, going out and being super angry towards these people, but almost educate them on how angry us as a society is when it comes to them being racist. I think it'll help maybe have those people second guess their beliefs and their hatred.
Johnny, your phone line's a little fuzzy, so I'm going to stop you there, but I hear what you're saying. You're saying be an activist. Don't just react with shock, but do something. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about this coming up. We're going to be speaking with Curtis Reed Jr. He's executive director of the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity, and we'll get more of your thoughts in. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking about race and racism in Vermont. We're talking about hate speech and hate groups after two black women in Burlington were targeted with Ku Klux Klan flyers last week. And it's become a public issue. It's become something that's being discussed and debated in Burlington and beyond. And we're looking at it as a state and having a statewide conversation today about racism. If you'd like to chime in with your thoughts, your perspective, your experiences, you can post a note at vpr.net/Vermont Edition, or you can email vermontedition@vpr.net, or call us 1-800-639-2211. Amanda wrote in to say, I agree with your earlier caller, Frank, from Rutland. There are a shocking number of Confederate flags flying around Vermont and New York. I don't want to think that it's racism, but it probably is, with a liberal dose of ignorance and insensitivity, and it is ugly. Let's bring in another voice here as we also bring in more of your thoughts and comments. Curtis Reed Jr. is executive director of the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity. Curtis, nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I want to make sure that we get some time for more thoughts from our listeners who are also thinking about this and reacting to it. But I'd love to get your initial reaction to what you've been hearing today on the program and to the event itself.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is Vermont's history relative to the KKK. We were the northern headquarters for the KKK in the early 1900s. There were cross burnings. There was, the Klan activity was quite active. And it was quite active up through the mid-1980s, where there was sort of annual Klan gatherings in southern Vermont and Wilmington at the White House Inn. There were annual literature drops, of KKK materials across Brattleboro for many, many years. And an attempt at a Klan gathering, kind of a parade down through downtown Brattleboro. So what I find disturbing about the event in Burlington is that this was not sort of a general leafleting, but it was targeted. And Jocelyn and the other victim, my heart goes out to you. In Vermont, we live in a human scale. And these events, and certainly as Vermont becomes much more racially and culturally diverse, really requires rethinking what does it mean to be a community member. And what that means, particularly for those in a dominant culture, is being active, not as an ally, but as an accomplice. As you hear something, you see something, that you address it directly with that individual, you know, who's spewing hate, as opposed to kind of ducking the question or skulking back into the corner somewhere. But that as community members, we all have a responsibility to make sure that our communities are inclusive and safe and supportive for all of our members, regardless of race or national origin.
We got a note from Lonnie who says, being a native Vermonter, I've seen my share of ignorance in our communities across the state. It's appalling, and it stems from a lack of diversity and education on this topic. Curtis, let's get another call in here, and then we'll come back to you. Sam's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. You're on.
So, you know, my fundamental comment is, as a white person in the United States and in Vermont, I just get very concerned when anybody is surprised that there's racism in any community. And I just, my heart goes out to Jocelyn and to the other victim, and I just really wanted to give my support to them. And my, it's just a horrible thing. I mean, I've experienced horrible things. I mean, when I was a kid, as a Jew, one of my best friends made, you know, an art piece that I had to give back to him that had a swastika on it, and I couldn't even give it back to him, and I was, like, in the third grade, you know. I've seen racism all over this country, and why wouldn't it be in Vermont? And it shouldn't be. But I just feel like when people get surprised and say, wow, in our community, you know, then there's something going on about, and I asked the question, well, if you're surprised about it, then what haven't you been doing? What you know, kind of what Curtis is talking about, what haven't you been doing? Because it means you haven't noticed it before. And I guarantee you that if you open your eyes, then you go into any community in the United States, and whether you're white or black, you'll see racism happening on a daily basis.
And Sam, yeah, thanks for that perspective. I hear you. Let's get one more call in here. Beth calling in from Waterbury. Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to share an experience I had this summer. I organize a camp, and I had two 11-year-old boys who were flinging insults at each other because they were mad about each other at something. And so one of them flung a one was a boy of color and one was a boy who was white. And the boy that was white flung an insult that had racist overtones. And the black boy called him on it and said, that's racist. You're not supposed to do that. And the white boy said, well, of course I'm racist. My whole family hates black people, so of course I'm racist. And just the openness of this exchange in front of everybody was kind of took us aback, but made us realize that we need to address educationally at very youngest ages what is culturally being instilled in family homes, because the kids are then in the community.
Beth, I hear you, and that's a good point to bring Curtis back in on, because the question I have for you, Curtis, and you know, our time is short, but you think about these issues a lot. What do you, not that anybody would ever want this to have happened, but what's the thing that we should be doing and learning from this incident? What do we need to do to keep moving forward and to make Vermont a better place?
Well, the first thing is to talk about it. We need new language around race. Not just a new language, but just old language. So have the conversation. You know, we're not in the habit of talking about race. White people are not in the habit of talking about race or talking about racism. And if we are living in these increasingly diverse communities, then we need to have that conversation. White people need to sort of wake up to the fact that, yes, there are racists among you. There's racists among all of us. But we need to pull it out of that private space into the public sphere, because what's happening is there will likely be more incidents like the one that happened unless, you know, our white Vermonters are fully engaged in talking about race and identifying those members of our community who harbor these hateful feelings.
Curtis, is that happening in white communities in Vermont?
It's starting. You know, there are small groups across the state that are of whites that are having these conversations. There's one in Brattleboro. I believe there's one in Middlebury, where the conversation amongst whites is, you know, how do we talk about race? How do we talk about racism? And more importantly, how do we act on the knowledge that racism exists in our communities?
Well, and there's more to do on that, and certainly more to talk about. The conversation for this hour is over, but the overall conversation is ongoing. I invite all of our listeners to join us at vpr.net. Carry on this conversation. We'll keep having it on the show. Curtis Reed is Executive Director of the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity. I appreciate you being on the program today and sharing your perspective, Curtis.
Thank you.
Again, listeners, share your thoughts with us. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition. Tell us what else you want us to discuss or surrounding race and racism on this program. And as always, thanks for listening. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition.